The national budget. Remember that old thing? From Marketplace. I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. Still no deal on coronavirus relief aid, but the House and Senate have one little nagging issue they might want to attend to: the national budget. The fiscal year starts October 1st, and the coronavirus crisis is just one obstacle on that long, bumpy road. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
Scott Lilly worked for more than 30 years as a budget staffer on Capitol Hill. He saw his share of gridlock, but he says this year takes the cake.
Even if they started to try to move bills right now, they're pretty much behind the eight ball.
They here is the Senate, and the bills Lilly's talking about, they're the 12 spending bills funding all the federal agencies Congress is supposed to pass each year and send to the White House for the president's signature before the new fiscal year begins. Lilly remembers very well the last time Congress was able to do that.
September 30th of 1994. I was the staff director at that time, so that was the last time that happened.
Lilly headed up the staff on the House Appropriations Committee. Now, this year, the House has passed most of the spending bills, clumping them together in two giant bills totaling more than $1 trillion. The Senate, though, hasn't even started the process. Henrietta Trays at the consulting firm Veda Partners says it's daunting for vulnerable senators worried about the budget deficit to consider the annual spending legislation while facing a vote on possibly trillions more in coronavirus relief.
And you get a real sense of deficit fatigue, and there are these eye-popping numbers that really give everybody some heartburn when they have to take these votes.
Then there's the election. No one wants to vote on controversial spending bills that might upset voters. Laura Blessing is a senior fellow at Georgetown's Government Affairs Institute.
You have a finite amount of time and attention on Capitol Hill, and, you know, these people want to work on their reelection campaigns.
Blessing says Congress will probably do what it always does with spending bills these days: ignore them, kick the can down the road, and avoid a government shutdown by passing a continuing resolution, temporarily funding the government at current levels, and tackling the spending bills again after the election when the coast is clear. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
At a time when it may indeed seem like Republicans and Democrats cannot agree on pretty much anything, the president did actually sign a bill yesterday that has broad bipartisan support. The bill is called the Great American Outdoors Act. It throws billions of dollars towards improving the nation's parks system. Conservationists say it's something they've been trying to achieve for decades. Marketplace's Nova Sappho is here with more. Morning, Nova.
Good morning.
So what does this new law do exactly?
Well, it allocates as much as $9.5 billion over the next 5 years to clear up a backlog in deferred maintenance at national parks that goes back decades, Sabri. And we're talking about a lot of infrastructure. We asked Linda Bilmes of the Harvard Kennedy School to put this in perspective for us, because she used to be on the National Park Service Advisory Board.
They are the second most infrastructure-intensive department of government after the Defense Department, with thousands of miles of roads and bridges and trails and parking lots and all kinds of infrastructure which needs to be maintained.
Why is the Park Service getting all of this additional money now when it hasn't for decades?
Well, the bill does have bipartisan support, as you mentioned, but two Republican senators from Western states have championed it. That's Cory Gardner of Colorado and Steve Daines of Montana. They're in tight races this November, and this legislation is something they can point to. So they were able to convince President Trump to get on board. It's infrastructure spending, after all, particularly when the pandemic has caused a drop in attendance at national parks and nearby communities. Here's Linda Bilmes again.
The national parks are very important for the economies of particularly the Western states, and they create a large number of jobs in the local communities surrounding the parks. And these jobs are now threatened. Many of them have been lost.
So jobs, jobs, jobs. Sabri, supporters say 100,000 new jobs from this bill.
Okay. Marketplace's Nova Sappho, thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's take a look at the numbers this morning. The FTSE in London is up 1.1%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all up in the 3 to 7/10% range, with the Dow future up 178 points. U.S. prosecutors are seeking up to $13 billion in penalties from Purdue Pharma, maker of OxyContin. The Justice Department joined other creditors seeking a piece of Purdue in bankruptcy court. Reuters reports the Justice Department believes it's uncovered evidence of criminal and civil misconduct in the company's alleged role in fueling the opioid crisis. Pharmacies are rarely just pharmacies these days. They're one-stop shops, convenient for consumers who want to consolidate their shopping trips in a pandemic. Marketplace's Erica Barris has more on how pharmacies are changing their business model to address this moment.
During stay-at-home orders, lots of people are using pharmacists to get medical information, says Mintel analyst Gabrielle Lieberman.
They are really the only people that we've maybe had a chance to interact with from that healthcare standpoint.
And drugstores sell more than pharmaceuticals. Much of the retail space is devoted to cosmetics, toys, and food. With the COVID-19 pandemic, University of Michigan business professor Eric Gordon says,
people are more comfortable going to a nearby pharmacy that's smaller, has fewer people in it, than they are going to a giant super center or a giant grocery store.
And people may not want to take public transportation to go to the grocery store.
Not only is it something that you have to spend a lot of time to get to, but it's dangerous to do that.
That's Carnegie Mellon professor Jeff Gallick. And for lots of people, pharmacies are the only nearby retail option. 23.5 million Americans don't live that close to grocery stores. But most people do live within 5 miles of a Walgreens or CVS. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.